It is Tuesday, October 21st, and this is Christiana Ellis and Mike Mateen with Talking About Survivor for Survivor Gabon, Episode 5. Talking about Survivor. That's the new jingle.
Is it really?
No.
Okay. I didn't know.
It is now. I just came up with it, but from now on, that's going to be the jingle.
Huh. Sounds
so
good.
Episode 5.
All right.
Woo.
Week 4, episode 5.
Yes. All right, with this one, I don't know, we can just get right into the chronological.
Sure.
Starts off, Ace is high and dry.
Yep.
And, you know, rightfully so, because, you know, here he's thinking it's already in the minority, and they just voted off one of my allies and former tribe mates, and also she was one of the stronger people, and we kept a weaker person instead. And just kind of like, huh. Like, well, now, just gotta keep optimistic to the best you can.
Yeah. His spirits seem to stay pretty high, even.
Yeah.
Even when he does get frustrated.
I was kind of impressed. Yeah, that I was a little impressed with that, actually, just that he seems to be able to maintain a pretty good attitude. And I wonder if it's just that he's sort of that confident in himself personally.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't even matter that his tribe is imploding, because he knows that he's awesome.
I mean, it really is. It's the difference between cocky to cover low self-esteem and cocky because you actually have really high self-esteem. He really has it. But even when he gets pissed off, like, you know, jumping ahead real quick to the second challenge where he was getting very frustrated with himself and with his ally, he still, by the time he got back to camp, he was still smiling and back. And I have to give him a lot of credit for that. You know, that he didn't, you know, go back and pout and be grumpy like we've seen people do. So it was the same thing here. You know, he lost they lost a strong person. He maybe thinks they didn't make the right decision, but he was not only wise enough to not really press on it and criticize anybody, or, you know, he just kind of, you know, smile and let's wait and see what happens because I'm awesome and I'll figure it out.
then we have Sugar, who returns and you know, I continue to really like her, but boy, she just can't lie worth a damn, can she?
Oh, she's terrible. But oh, real quick before that, when Ace is trying to save the rice for Sugar because she hasn't eaten in 3 days, and Kenny basically just tells him, like, just shut your mouth. Like, I mean, that was pretty. I mean, did you catch that? I mean, it was really quick. You know, he wasn't like aggressive, but it was probably one of the most aggressive that Kenny's ever been. He's just kind of like, no. But yeah, and then she came back, and oh, it was terrible. Like, because I was thinking, if you were out there, I wouldn't even tell them that you had taken the comfort. I would have just, I've been like, you know, it is miserable out there. Like,
I think she just hadn't thought about it. It hadn't occurred to her that she shouldn't tell them until it was already out of her mouth, and that's when she started trying to come up with the additional explanation of, oh, yeah, because I got to the third clue last time and it was too hard. Ha ha, ha ha.
Yeah. That's true. I guess you could have told them, at least if you had prefaced it that way and been like, look, you know what? I knew I was going to be out there for 3 friggin' days. There was no way I was going to be hunting around not eating when there was all that food there. It just doesn't make sense.
Right, but she didn't play it that way at all. It totally played like, oh, yeah, and it wasn't so bad because I took the comfort. Oh, crap, I shouldn't have told them that because now they're going to wonder why I wasn't looking for the idol. Well, now I have to come up with an explanation to cover. That's what it played like.
Yeah.
And so I was just watching that and going, oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, she had another explanation about something, about leaving her bag out basically later that felt the same way.
Well, that one was weird, too, because it was just so clearly, like, it's like her strategy was to let them find out.
But see, I don't think that's what it was. I think it was exactly like this. I think she just didn't worry about it, and then when Ace asked her if she hid it, she was like, oh, shit. I mean, No, I didn't, because that's my strategy to not hide it so they could find it. You know? That's how
right.
I took it, at least. I mean, we don't know her intentions, but especially after having seen this one, I thought she did the same exact thing, where all of a sudden it dawned on her, like, oh, yeah, they could find it. Uh-oh, Ace will be mad. Better come up with something. You know?
Yeah. So, Sugar... Here's a tip, because I like you. This is some advice from me to you, okay? That whole thing about hiding in plain sight is one of those things that sounds clever, but almost never actually works. Because, generally speaking, when people are looking for something, plain sight is where they look first. So, really, it's kind of just saves them time.
Yeah. And also, Sugar, if your goal is to be able to leverage having the idol to get people to not vote you out, you have to actually, you know, admit to having it and leverage it like Yule did, where he basically said, I have it, you can't do anything to me because I will play it if you mess with me. You can't just... let them kind of have, because then they literally they'll blindside you. You know, if they know what you don't know they know, or you're not pressing on them or using it, if you're not actually leveraging it, you're going to get screwed. You know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless there's some weird rule that we didn't see this time where, you know, you can play it after your votes have all been read. You know, but I don't think they're doing that this time.
I think she was just so pleased with herself about naming it the Sugar Shack that she just, like, she couldn't wait to tell everybody.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that really is probably what it came down to.
That was pretty fun, though. I mean, the Sugar
absolutely.
Shack is, yeah, it's funny.
I thought it was great. I mean, and that's why it kind of sucked that in order to tell everybody how happy she was that she'd come up with that clever name, that she had to basically blow... any chance of them believing that she didn't have the idol. So
yeah. And so Crystal is already targeting her, and at the same time that we, you know, go ahead and give Crystal credit for that, I'm still also thinking a little bit, duh. You know, like, you know, I suppose I do give you credit for being suspicious, but it's almost just like not... taking away credit if you hadn't been suspicious. That's too many negatives.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Is that if she hadn't figured it out, you would have been...
that would have been stupid.
Yeah.
But, and so she was not stupid, as opposed to being particularly insightful or perceptive.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. You know, I keep going back and forth with Crystal. You know, it's like there's times where I kind of like her and then times where I kind of don't, and I keep kind of changing my mind.
I guess it's not that extreme. I mean, I tend to, for the most part, kind of dislike her, not really care for her. But occasionally she makes me say, I guess she's not that bad. Mm-hmm. But I never actually move into, like, the... towards the liking column.
Yeah. I know what you mean, but I think there's times where, yeah, I mean, she's never my favorite or anything, but there are times when I like her. I think she's got the right idea, but I'm going to go ahead and encourage her to get the the season long subscription to Trio of Dysfunction. You know, because she's just she's not. Yeah, she's still part of that, but there are some times where she's better than other times.
Yes, agreed.
So, did you notice that the credits sequences are being updated by the episode?
Yes.
That was kind of cool. I hadn't noticed it before now, but I definitely noticed it this time that it was only showed the people who are still on the show right now, and it's already split them out based on the new tribes that they got last episode.
Yep. And something tells me, I think they've done that before. I think I remember having seen that before where they started pulling people out. And I think we might have even talked about it, but maybe we didn't.
Well, I know that they've done it in the past where, like at the merge or something, they'll switch to showing only the
maybe that's
ones.
It.
But I don't feel like I've seen them do it, like, every episode before.
Yeah, and I don't recall carefully enough, so I don't know, but I'll trust you on that. But I did notice it, yes. And I think part of that is a tribute to the fact that the credits are actually really cool this time because of the HD and the nature porn and all that kind of stuff. So it makes me less likely to fast forward if I'm watching it on DVR like I would typically do. So it's. Or get up if I'm watching it live and go do something else, you know, because I know it's going to commercial. It's more engaging, which I think is why I noticed. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, speaking of nature porn, electric fish!
Yes. Like electric, like catfish looking thing.
I know! I didn't know that there were electric catfish. I mean, you know, everyone's kind of heard of electric eels, and I guess I kind of knew in the back of my mind somewhere that there were other kinds of fish that kind of did that too, but I didn't know that there was things like that. I mean, it looked just like a catfish, except apparently it could zap people.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, well, I mean, it's a catfish because it lives in, I mean, it's like catfish do. They live in muddy water, so it has to have those feelers, but yeah, I didn't know. I guess that's what you find in The Last Eden.
Yeah, apparently. But that was awesome.
It was cool.
it was such a funny little thing. Just the way they kept all taking turns, having it zap them, that was funny.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, and it really just, and actually from a game standpoint, it really showed, I thought that was one of the best illustrations in the differences in the two camps. I mean, the other one, they're over there bitching and fighting about rice and 2 grains versus 13 grains and this, that, and the this camp, they're, hey, come touch my new electric fish, you know.
Yeah, it was very teacher-like, too, of Bob when he found it to just sort of, it was almost like show and tell, you know, because he figured out what it was when it zapped him the first time, and he's like, hey, cool, let's show everybody else this, and he was kind of standing by showing it to everybody.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool.
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was great. But you definitely could see the difference in the priorities between the camps.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, clearly. I mean, and if nothing else, how about Randy finding some nice things to say? He has no complaints. Those are his words. No complaints. Wow.
I know.
If nothing else, that would tell us that the camps are very different from one another.
Yeah. Because he was clearly just like, he's been blown away by how much better it is over there.
Mm-hmm. I like, though, that he's not letting that make him complacent. He's fully aware that although this is great, he knows that he is potentially one of the people on the chopping block if they have to vote someone out. And so he's kind of... He's not getting blissed out with the new tribe vibe.
No, he's just kind of... I mean, he's doing exactly what he's supposed to do. He's working hard. He's busting his butt in challenges. I guess this is the big difference between him and Dan is the old adage, you know, show, don't tell. Mm-hmm. You know, he's living the Coda lifestyle, whereas Dan is telling everyone how loyal he is to Coda.
Yeah.
Not that he's not showing it also, but by saying it over and over again, he's making people suspicious. By Randy just being a Coda, he's not. You know, and then by Susie just not doing anything, she makes people suspicious. So Randy is, out of the three people, Randy's the one that's cruising right now, I think. I think he's found the best line.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
I agree.
You know, Marcus actually points out a little bit later, and I think, I mean, I jumped ahead a little bit on that, but, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll come back to that, definitely.
Well, yeah, because he mostly discusses the other two, so yeah, this is really, I mean, he doesn't really talk about Randy here, so I guess it is appropriate to talk about Randy's place in the tribe at this point, because of what, that, so. Anyway, sorry.
That's alright. I think that's, this is about where we get the elephant visit.
Yep.
That was cool. Although it was kind of funny, because I couldn't, I mean, I guess elephants just do stuff like that, but I couldn't help but think it's like, it's just like knocking over trees for fun. That seems like what it was doing. It was just kind of like, aha, there's another tree, and oh, look, there's a big one. Crash, haha. That was my little mental narrative as I watched the elephant.
I guess I didn't, I thought it was just knocking them down so it could get to their leaves, but maybe it was doing well, it for fun.
Because yours probably is makes more sense. It's a, you know, less anthropomorphic.
Yeah. Well, because I think that's how they eat. I don't think they eat off of the trees. I think they break the trees and then like shred everything off of it, like basically like skin it, and then pull the bunch of like junk that they've ripped off the tree up with their tusk and throw it in their mouth. I don't think they go like giraffes and nibble off of trees like without. I think that's why they have tusks, is so they can turn and snap trees.
Mm-hmm.
But no, and, I'm getting too sciencey, I guess.
Well, no, that's valid, since mostly yours is probably the more educational perspective on what the elephant was doing.
But still, elephant smash sounds a lot cooler.
Well, maybe it was a little of both. Maybe it was knocking them down for food, but it was also having a good time doing it.
Maybe that's why they evolved that way, because it's really cool to have to smash shit to get your food.
Yeah. It's kind of like, oh, look, there's a big one. Crash. Ha-ha, that's fun. I'm totally going to eat that now.
There we go. I think that is probably the best explanation.
Well, it's good to know the elephants are having such a good time.
Yep.
And good for Ace and it was Ace and Maddie, right, that went out in the
kayak? Yeah.
That was cool. I was glad that they did that, and I thought that the others, you know, I thought the danger of it was played up a little bit, because it's not like they just went over to pet it or something.
Right.
I mean, they were way out in the water.
Yeah, I would have been a little more concerned had they, like, kayaked over there and, like, hopped out of the kayak and, like, ran after the elephant or something, or Ace had created some kind of plan to build a trap so they could have meat for the rest of the time or something, you know.
Right.
But yeah, just kayaking over.
Let's make a little bamboo saddle and ride it around.
Yeah. So any of those things, you know, that then I would have agreed with GC, where he was like, you know, don't mess with the elephant. But in reality, they weren't really messing with it. They just kind of kayaked
over.
They
just went to get a closer look.
Take a look, yeah.
Yeah.
And then Maddie had sort of his transcendental experience where he stepped out of the game.
You know, I couldn't help but think that at the same time that I'm sure I would feel the same way, and I kind of like Maddie more for feeling that way and having that reaction, it still read as a little cheesy.
It was way cheesy.
On screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a little bit. Yeah, it was a little cheesy.
I don't think he expressed it correctly, was really what it came down to. I mean, I could see how it could be moving to be that close to an elephant and, you know, just remind you of, you know, our place and all that, and how there is, you know, there are things outside of cities and human, you know, social connections, that there's this whole world out there. But to to say it somehow, like, made him, like, I don't remember. So it was something about, like, life and death, and it was like, what? I don't think you really mean that. I don't even remember what he said exactly, but it was just kind of like, I don't know. It was something that didn't quite connect with me, but yeah.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think he had just sort of a, wow, nature is awesome sort of thing, and he was just not able to really express that as well as we might like. And so I like that he had the reaction, but yeah, definitely cheesy.
Yeah, I'm 100% agreement with that. So.
All right, so...
Fruit catching challenge.
Oh, yeah. How fun. That was... See, this is a perfect example, I think. I think we can definitely see that they're using a lot less lumber in these challenges than they have in the past, which doesn't necessarily mean it's all because of the problems they had getting stuff in, but clearly they're still coming up with some cool, fun challenges.
Yeah, because this one was really different than... I mean, I don't want to say it was 100% different than anything we've ever seen, but this was... I felt this one was unique, you know, more so than I usually do. And actually, well, in the second one, too.
It got everybody involved, too, which I really liked. Because I actually had that complaint about the immunity challenge, which we'll get to later. But this one, definitely, everybody was doing something. There was different strategy that could get involved, and there was just the whole fun stuff of, you know, throwing the fruit and smashing the fruit with the bats, and, oh, you get to keep whatever's left, and winning the herb garden. It was just fun.
Yeah, I love everything about it was cool.
Yes. And poor Ace with the pineapple to the face. He's just getting a lot of face injuries this episode.
Yes. But
getting knocked down because he got hit in the face with a pineapple. Wow. That's just kind of like... I saw that and I was just like, ow.
Yeah,
That really looks like it would suck.
Well, pineapple too, because not only is it heavy, but it's also like spiny.
Sharp and rough, and yeah, it's like he got hit in the face with a pineapple. Hard enough that it knocked him over. But yeah, he was doing great though. I mean, totally, he's the like MVP. I think of the challenge, even though ultimately the other tribe.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's the MVP because he forced them to change their strategy.
Yeah.
So I guess Marcus. I mean, well, maybe we'd have to say Marcus would be the MVP since he was the one that came up with the idea to throw two pieces of fruit, which ended up
true. And that's a good point because I mean, obviously they did. You know, Coda did win, so.
Ace performed his job the best, but the MVP of the challenge would have to be Marcus.
Well, right. So he's no question he's the MVP of his own tribe, but just kind of like with the water challenge last time, he's working his butt off, but he doesn't have that much help from the rest of his tribe.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, Crystal... Until the very end, I don't think she even smashed a piece of fruit. And there were a couple of times where I watched where they had a cut where they would throw the fruit and she would just stand and watch it because Ace was doing so well that she didn't even pick up the bat. And it was one of those times where I started to dislike her more than be impassive about her.
It's just strange because given that... It's like she'd better not tell anybody she's a gold medalist now because they'll be pissed. I mean, because like the whole reason for like not telling people, assuming that still figures into the equation at all, was the idea of like sort of playing down that she's a physical threat, but that hasn't been a problem.
No.
So, yeah.
I mean, maybe when they do the relay running challenge, she can bust out, but...
Well, maybe. Hopefully. I mean, one would hope that she's going to have something at some point, because at this point right now, it just seems like Well, clearly she must really be very athletic, but just in a very sort of narrow, specific area. Because she's not really been that strong in a lot of the other types of challenges.
Yeah, she hasn't. So,
I wonder if it's just kind of as simple as she knows how to run, because it's... I'm not trying to insult runners or anything here when I say that running is simple. But to a large extent, it requires running in a straight line, and the only real strategy of it is how you pace yourself.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I was getting at, actually, with when I made that joke that when we get to the relay running challenge, you know, she'll be good. That's exactly what I'm saying, is that she doesn't have – she doesn't have dynamic athleticism. It's clear. You know, I'm sure she's an incredibly gifted runner, but it doesn't seem to translate in her ability to do anything else, which, of course, I mean, running doesn't require hand-eye coordination. I mean, there's just different things that are needed. So.
Yeah. So, you know, way to go, Coda. You know, they even came from behind after changing strategy, and, you know, good for Marcus on picking up on that. And
well, yeah. I mean, and he was instrumental with two things. I mean, obviously coming up with throwing the two fruits, but he was also realized that since he was the guy who was the beginning thrower, he started going only for the big fruits. Because he watched that Fong was having a lot of success, but it was all small fruit. So he knew the only way to catch up once they had gotten behind was to only use big fruit, which is, you know, obviously hard to throw, which is why it was going lower and, you know, hitting people in the face and you know. but it worked out. I mean, he figured it out. So, yeah, congratulations to them.
And did you catch this funny little moment, like, where they're essentially, I think it was just a happy moment when Jeff is saying, you know, you get to take your herb garden home or whatever, and Marcus did this weird little, like, playful bite on Charlie's shoulder. Did you see that?
No.
It was just like this little split-second thing, but it was a little weird. I saw that, and I was like, what? Oh, okay. I mean, it was just kind of an enthusiastic in-the-moment sort of thing, but it was a little bit strange, especially from the straight guy who's continually having to reassure that the gay guy that he's straight.
Yeah.
It seemed an odd gesture.
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't know what that was all about.
I have no idea. I didn't even see that.
Yeah, well, if it was right, like, when they were being given their prize, I think, when they had already won.
Okay, yeah, I'll have to go back and look. I mean, the only thing that was going through my mind when they had already won was, you know what, it's probably better because Fong probably would have killed the herb garden anyway.
Yeah,
they probably would have. Because
they would have said, well, it needs a lot of sun, right? So let's just set it out in the middle of the, you know, the camp in the sunniest area.
And then they would have had arguments about whether it needed real lake water or whether it had to have boiled water, or, you know.
Well, yeah.
To the point where it just would never have gotten watered. And then they would have eaten all of the herbs, so there would be nothing left to grow. And, yeah.
Right.
I mean, I could just see all that's what all was running through my mind, is how bad they would have screwed that thing up if they had received it.
Yeah.
You know, because you always think that when they give them these renewable things like the chickens or the herb gardens, you know, you're just waiting for the tribe that's just going to botch it, you know, not be able to keep the thing, and they would have done that. So anyway,
And so how about the line when they send sugar again?
Dan's joke that totally fell flat.
I thought that was pretty funny. I didn't think it fell flat at all. I thought it was awesome.
No, it didn't fall flat with us, but it seemed to... I thought it did with the people out there. I thought it was hilarious, too.
I think the problem was the other tribe took him seriously.
Right. That's what I meant by fell flat. I guess I didn't...
Oh, okay.
I didn't mean it was a bad joke. I meant it wasn't appreciated.
Yeah. But I that one, Dan, definitely some big points back for me. Just because that was, it was just funny.
It was funny. It's,
well, and especially too when, you know, when he was called on it, he was able to explain, no, actually it is strategy, I was just kidding, and this is why. You know, so, I mean, he really did know what he was talking about and was making a joke, so.
Right, which is why, to me, it was funny, but, and the, mm-hmm. the only part that made it unfortunate was that, or not, not unfortunate for him, but I guess unfortunate to me, was that Sugar didn't seem to get it, and she seemed to be kind of bent about it, and,
yeah,
you know, when that took her down, I mean, just a peg in my book, because I was like, he was really trying to be funny, and she was all like, ha ha, joke's on you, you know, getting all like, I don't know, bitter about it. Yeah. I didn't like that, so.
Well, I agree. I couldn't help but think that maybe she was sort of compensating for just being disappointed to get sent again, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Because then when she actually went, she didn't seem like she was bothered by it too much.
No.
She was having a good time, so.
Yeah.
Oh, but
I think she does get bugged about it a little bit. I mean, the social aspect of it, she doesn't let on, which is why it almost seems like she, not trying too hard, but she really puts like an almost an overly positive spin on it. Like, you know, I'm eating better than everybody, I'm fatter than everybody. Like, almost, and it has that, just that twinge of just that little underlying bitterness. Like, I'm okay out here, but I'm kind of pissed off that I'm by myself and.
Yeah,
they keep sending me here, which that I don't think is a negative on her at all. I just, you know, you almost can see the underlying kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather be with other people.
Yeah, you know? No, I agree. I think that's, she's just kind of, she's, I think, just conflicted. You know, I mean, she's sort of trying to talk herself into not being upset.
That's a great way to put it. I think she's, you know, doing it more not to show us, but to talk herself into feeling better about having to be alone. I mean, because when you really think about that, I mean, yeah, she's got food and the lake and stuff, but you're sitting in a shack by yourself for like 2 days. I mean, think about that. Like,
well, and also just the whole idea that it's like, you know, I'm coming to go play the game of Survivor, and then you're just sort of sitting there all day by yourself. Reflecting is like, how is this playing the game of Survivor? This is like not how I saw it.
Yeah.
Not what I expected. You know, that sort of thing's got to come into your mind.
I mean, think about like the last time. I mean, she was there for 3 full days.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. Having nothing to really do except hang out with no one else.
Yeah.
You know, what do you do all day? Do you mean... I mean, it really struck me on this one for some reason, and I know it's always been there, but this one really made me think about and actually, you know, almost empathize with what that must be like. To, you know, what would you do? I mean, do you just sleep at, like, whenever you get tired, you just go to sleep because it doesn't really matter? I mean, or do you try to find stuff to do all day and then only sleep at night? Or
I can imagine sleeping and eating would be a big part of it just because you've kind of been deprived of that in other areas. Yeah. But you know, at the same time, there's only so much of that you can do in a day. I can't help but think that the rest of it would just kind of either be lying around daydreaming or maybe just exploring the little area that you've got.
Yeah. You know, and then like I said, it really struck me. So I was getting there and I was like, do you run around and like swim around a lot, or do you have to be like, I have to sit still because I have to conserve my energy, which would be even more boring? Because, I mean, at least if you can go exploring or go swimming, like, you'd have stuff to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, and so I tried to, you know, I was putting myself in that position and saying, well, that's what I'd want to do, but would I force myself to sit around and do nothing so that I was rested? I'm probably way overthinking it, but for some reason that whole thing, like, it just really struck me in this episode more than it has.
I think it's worth thinking about a little bit, just because it goes by so fast in the episode that it's easy to kind of forget how much time she's actually out there.
Right.
Yeah. So, back at CODA, Dan's leadership style apparently is a better fit for CODA, at least according to him.
His leadership style of telling them that, hey, because I'm in the minority, I really want to actually be part of you guys.
Yeah.
Which, he would seem genuine, but it was kind of funny.
Well, yeah, it was, again, it was kind of like what Marcus said, which was, it's not that I distrust him exactly, he just feels like he's trying too hard.
Yeah.
And so it makes it hard to trust someone who is trying so hard to get you to trust them, because it's like, you know, clearly that's what they want, but it almost gets pushy. And if there's anything that's hard to trust, it's someone who's being pushy. Because
right,
that just instantly makes you want to kind of retreat from them.
Especially when you're predisposed to think that they're going to do anything to save themselves, you know, because
yeah.
They're in the minority. So you already have this built-in distrust.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start getting, you know, very overt like that, and you look at it and you're like, what's his deal?
He's definitely trying to, like, step forward and do leader-type things, even, it seems like. You know? It was him that was sort of speaking for the tribe when they sent Sugar.
Yep. You know, it was him that sort of... I really had to respect him. It just sucks that, you know, because he's in the minority, he gets the bad rap. But I had to respect him for kind of saying what everybody was thinking, is that, hey, look, you know, when this all kind of comes down, we really are the seven strongest people, and we should think about sticking together when we go to the merge and picking off all of them over there because they're terrible. You know, maybe that's not really the best strategy because you don't want the seven strongest people going into the merge either, but at least he said what everybody was thinking is, well, we kind of like this group of people, even with our new people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I respect him for that, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also understand where Marcus is coming from, and that's why earlier I gave Randy so much credit, because he's doing the same thing that Dan is trying to do, but doing it without saying anything.
Right, right. He's like, he doesn't have to talk it through, he just does it.
Yeah.
Whereas Dan really feels like he can't just do it. He needs to explain what he's doing and why he's doing it, and
right.
And he talks so much about it that it becomes almost suspicious in and of itself.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of talking the talk versus walking the walk, to use an old cliche.
Yeah. Well, I did it too because I said it's show versus tell.
Yeah.
You know, Randy's showing them he's loyal. Dan is telling them he's loyal. And
yeah.
Which is more impactful? You know, Randy. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's see.
Eat your rice.
Eat your rice, yeah. Oh, man.
This was one of the most awkward but funny scenes I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think that's where I was starting to almost like Crystal a little bit, just because I was so on her side during that conflict. Just in that whole, it's like, you know, they're all hungry because they realized they ate too much earlier on GC's advice. And now that they're having to cut their rations down to this tiny, tiny amount, now he's complaining about it.
Yep.
I feel like I would have been right there with Crystal, just like, just eat the rice, come on. And then he can't let anything go, and so all of a sudden it's like, It was just like what you were saying before. You almost feel like he's going to dump his rice on the floor and just say, "Oh yeah, tell me to eat my rice." Well, I'm gonna spit on it and like stamp it into the dirt just to show you.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that. I thought he really wasn't going to eat his rice because she kept telling him to.
Yeah.
I thought he was just going to throw it away and be like, you know, screw you and your and my rice.
Yeah.
You or go over and like shove it in her mouth, be like, "You eat my damn rice," you know, like. Like Lawrence Fishburne in that Tina Turner movie. Just eat the cake. Eat the cake. <You know? laughs> Come on, baby, have some cake. You know, I could just see him doing that to Crystal. Oh yeah, you eat my rice. Eat my rice.
But no, then he needs to go figure some things out. And she was just kind of, and I loved how after he leaves, she just kind of turns, I think it was to Ace, and just said, "You knew I was just kidding, right?" I mean, just kind of like, she can't even believe that this just happened.
Oh, dude, and Ace looked like the Cheshire Cat, dude.
Oh, totally. He was just like, "Yeah, this is great."
I mean, he had a grin that was just silly. I mean,
yeah. Oh, man, that was so fun. Oh, and so GC goes off in his, off in the kayak, even though they had already gotten the tree mail, even, according to the edit, at least.
Yeah, no, so, I mean, it seemed to be that he knew what he was doing, that he, which is probably
like, yeah,
he was, he returned on time, because he probably knew when he had to be back, or, although I guess he doesn't really have a watch, but.
I don't know, or it could be that he was kind of passive-aggressively hoping that they would leave without him, but then eventually they didn't leave, and they kept yelling for him, so he decided to come back.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Although this was probably my favorite part of, my favorite Crystal part of the whole episode. The eat your rice was pretty good, but when the fact, when she's just sitting there and she's like, "I am not going to go down there and yell at some grown man."
Yeah.
Coming back in his kayak.
Exactly. See, that's that's kind of where I was liking her, was just kind of like, really? I mean, if this is the way he's going to act, I almost kind of, I'm not going to go, you know, freak out and yell off the dock. But
well,
then,
even the ones yelling off the dock, I mean, Kelly had this fucking silly grin, like she didn't even really think, I mean, that he was going to come back.
Want to all scream at the same time?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's how it works. I mean,
but she was almost laughing like she knew it wasn't even really like, yeah.
Well, I think they were all just kind of a little dumbfounded. It's kind of like none of them could even really quite believe that. Like Maddie was just, he looks just like gobsmacked, is like, "I can't believe this is happening." He's like, how could it, how did we get in this situation?
Yeah, I mean, really? You just rode off? Like, really?
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, as, you know, excited as we were last time, he really did come back.
Oh, well, you know. Maybe he got nudged by the producer.
You never know. You never know if they were out and they were like, you know, it's a rule that you can't miss challenges. Because it very well might be. I mean, otherwise, wouldn't you think that they would do stuff like that with, like, weak players? Like, conveniently lose them, or they were conveniently happened to be running around the jungle or something?
Yeah.
I mean, there must be some kind of rule that you have to participate, or you get thrown off the show or something.
Mm.
And they probably, that this is what I at least thought happened out there, that he was rowing around, you know, and either he, my two theories were, he either knew because he saw that the challenge, he read the tree mail, so he knew the challenge was coming, so he was just being a pain in the ass, and he rowed away long enough, just long enough to annoy everybody, but came back because he knew we had to be in the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Or he was really rowing away, and the producers said, "Hey, do you understand that it's a rule that you can't miss challenges? You have to go back."
Mm-hmm.
And they sent him back.
Or it could have been kind of like the second one, only kind of like almost a combination where maybe he really kind of, well, it's like what I was saying before, where he was kind of hoping that they would leave without him. But when they just kept yelling for him, he said, okay, fine, whatever. Because they, you know, that's when he was rowing back up. They're like, you know, we almost left without you. And he's like, that would have been cool with me. I'm like, oh, for crying out loud, GC, geez. Okay, so at that point, I was just kind of, I was done with him. I mean, I was mostly done with him already, but right there, it was just kind of like, okay, he's not even trying anymore.
No, he was checked out.
Yeah.
Oh, the one other thing I liked is the tree mail sent them the example of the ball.
Yeah.
And I totally thought it, too, just like they did, that they were going to have to get in the ball like hamster balls.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, so it was a total fake out. And
yeah.
And not that, it really didn't make a huge strategic difference in the challenge, but it was still kind of funny that everybody, you know, everybody went into it thinking, we're going to have to roll around in these hamster balls, and then it wasn't that at all.
No. I didn't really like this challenge very much.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, the hill was kind of cool. It looked like fun, but I just felt like there was no, except for the caller and the goalie person, there was like no teamwork in the challenge at all, and I don't know. I just didn't get into it.
I loved.
Okay.
Because it was different. I mean, you're right, there was no teamwork, and it kind of not bothered me, but I didn't like the. I mean, the hill was so steep that it really didn't matter. There was no strategy to where you threw the ball. I mean, it was just going to roll and do whatever anyway.
Yeah, see, that's really kind of like my complaint is that like 5 of the 7 people didn't do anything except roll a ball down the hill with no strategy involved.
Right.
And so it was really just all about the goalie and the caller.
But that part was cool enough to me to enjoy it.
Fair enough. I mean, obviously some interesting things happened in it, especially just given that Ace and Sugar, who had been, you know, allies, she's not doing the kind of calling job that he thought she should do.
No.
And so... Yeah,
and Randy did a great job.
Mm-hmm. Did you see where he yells out, Ace, freeze! And Ace froze.
Yeah. Dude, I wrote that in my... I mean, that was a thing I wrote in my notes the biggest. I mean, Randy went playground on Ace. Because that's playground... I mean, that's playground basketball. I mean, that is straight blacktop basketball. You know, when someone is got a rebound or something, and they're starting to, like, trip, and they need to pass the ball because they're not going to be able to dribble and... control it. Uh-huh. Someone from the other team always calls for it, and you know, sure enough, people, you know, you got to be, you know, not throw them a blind pass. It's the same thing. I mean, it's straight playground basketball, and I thought that was awesome. I was like, Randy, that's great.
Yeah.
And the funniest part about it is, like, usually when you're playing blacktop basketball, you are playing with like 10 guys. So, you know, whether it's, you know, one of the 4 that are on your team or one of the 5 that are on your team, it's harder to decipher. But when it's Sugar from your tribe and Randy from the other tribe, you got to feel like you would be able to identify the difference. So, I mean, come on, Ace.
I guess it was just with the blindfold and all, he was just that desperate for direction that he felt like he wasn't getting from Sugar that he hesitated.
Yep.
You know, so...
I mean, that's why it works on the playground. And that's why it worked here, is that you're looking for that out because you're so desperate for direction, and that's where it comes from in basketball. I mean, it only works if you're in a blind spot and you have to get rid of the ball.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't work if you're just dribbling down the court and someone from their team turns to you and goes, "Hey, give me the ball." You don't pass it to them. but it's when you're falling out of bounds or you're coming off a rebound and someone screams for it, you know, you just need to get rid of the ball. You don't even care who it is. You're just so happy that somebody said, give me the ball. And that's what he looked like. He was just like, oh, finally, you know, someone's telling me exactly what to do. Yeah. You know, then, freeze, freeze, freeze. Okay. Wait a minute. That doesn't... So that was... maybe that's why I like the challenge so much, is because that part right there was, I mean, was so cool.
Yeah, that was pretty good. And then poor Ace gets another face injury. The shield to the face this time.
Shield to the face. Was it because the ball clipped it or something on the end? Is that what happened?
Well, they were both blindfolded. I think that it was Marcus that had the other
Dan.
Dan. So I think what it was is he was just kind of turning and he was kind of pulling the edge back and he didn't realize Ace was just standing right there.
Oh, so you Dan hit him?
That's what I thought it was, is that there was a collision that Dan hit Ace with the side of his shield. So he was like turning and clipped Ace's face with the side of his shield is what I thought happened.
What I thought happened was Ace didn't quite get all the way to where the rolling ball was, and it hit the very end of his shield and knocked it his own shield into his face. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know that's what happened, but that's what I had thought happened.
Yeah. I don't know. See, now I wonder. Because I thought I remembered seeing it just like I described, but, you know, people make stuff up like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, you come up with some little narrative to explain what must have happened, and then your brain invents the memory of seeing it happen. But either way, obviously he got hit in the face with the shield and was actually down for a minute. Oh. He didn't seem to have any, like, he didn't have, like, a black eye or swollen cheek or anything, really, that I could tell later, but...
No, that's what... I started to think English soccer with him. You know how they always, you know, because in order to get red cards and stuff, there's a lot of flopping involved.
Mm.
I started, that's what I thought he had done. Was, I don't know, maybe somehow hoping to play favor somehow.
Because well, he
didn't seem like it hurt him. But, you know, he was rolling on the ground. Oh, my face, shield to the face. Oh, and then he just pops up and he's ready to go. I mean, it looked like soccer. You know? Which I can't fault him for, but it didn't seem like he was really that hurt, so.
Yeah. Well, you know, the blindfold also probably plays a role in that, though, because it sloped downhill. So if he got hit hard enough, even if it wasn't a serious injury, it might have, like, made him fall over onto his back. And when you're on your back, head downhill, blindfolded, I could see how almost anyone wouldn't get up right away. You know, you would just be kind of like, okay, wait a minute, I need to get my bearings here.
Yeah. And either way, I didn't think it was any kind of negative, whether he was, you know, playing it up for drama or whether it really hurt that bad or whether he, you know, you said he was sort of in an uncomfortable position. No matter what happened, I don't care one way or the other. I still like him. He's actually growing on me more than he had been. So.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm liking him more after this episode, too, definitely. I think his attitude's just kind of a big part of that. I mean, sometimes it comes across as arrogance, but it also just shows that he's really able to kind of keep sailing through even when stuff's not going his way.
Because it's a genuine arrogance. You know, it's not this false bravado that he puts on to, you know.
Yeah, he's not just a jerk.
Yeah, he really does believe he's that awesome. And that's kind of fun, you know.
One might even say, godlike. But no, I don't want to really try to imply that that there's even some real similar. Who was it last season that said that? Oh crap, I can't even remember his name now. The guy who said that he was godlike, and we argued the whole time about whether he was serious or not.
Oh, I don't remember who that was either.
But anyway.
That was fans versus favorites, right?
Yes, yeah. That was last season, yeah. But just the one guy who... not Jason.
It wasn't Joel, was it?
No, it was not Joel. Because he was like he was the guy who was the second guy in a row that
Mikey?
Didn't use
it wasn't Mikey.
No, the second guy in a row who didn't use the idol, and he was talking about how because he got fooled in the same way that Ozzy did, that made him just as cool as Ozzy.
Was that Jason?
Jason, yeah. I was thinking it was him.
Was Jason, yeah, Jason, who, yeah, he was the one that said he was godlike.
Well, don't you say that now like you knew the whole time and it was...
No, I'm saying it because it revealed itself to me,
is Jason.
It was like a wave of understanding. I wasn't saying that like I knew it the whole time. Because deep down, you and I both knew who we were talking about. And so when that realization showed up, it all flowed, you know. To the front of my brain. That's why it came out like that.
<You know>? Okay then. But anyway,
you never had that happen where there's that thing that you're just you know it's there, and then as soon as you find it, it's like a floodgate opens and all of your memories of exactly what happened just roll out. And
I wasn't skeptical of that. I was skeptical of your tone because I felt like your tone was sort of like, yeah, it was Jason.
I was actually more saying that to myself than to you. I guess that's what... So that's where the tone was. The tone was telling myself that, yeah, dude, you should have known this.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, I think we're both liking Ace more.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, Coda wins, although it was a close one. For all of the tribe balance and dysfunction,
the only reason it was close is because Dan blocked his own.
Yeah, that's true.
Because Ace never blocked a ball. So the two things that made it close were that Matty, through his great rolling skills, got it into the five.
Mm-hmm.
And that Dan blocked his own ball. If not for those two things, had Matty not scored a five and Dan not blocked his own ball, this would have been an annihilation. I mean, they really did do better. Because
that's
Dan
true.
Continuously stopped balls and Ace did not. So,
agreed. Yeah, that's definitely true. So, anyway, there's tension at the Fong tribe afterwards.
Yes.
I have a note here that I actually don't 100% remember what I was thinking, which was just asking, what was Matty doing when GC was talking about quitting? And I guess my question was because I felt like we weren't seeing him during all those conversations. Or maybe he was doing something specific and I don't remember what it was. Sometimes my notes are less helpful than they could be.
Yeah. Now I'm trying to think back, and I don't think he was doing anything. So maybe he was conspicuously absent?
I think that might have been it, because I just felt like I didn't know what he was up to. And because he was kind of... of the four old Fong members, he's kind of the one that's not really with the other three. And so I guess maybe I wanted to know more about what he was up to during that whole section. But I don't know. My note isn't as clear as it should have been. but then we get Sugar trying to explain to Ace, nobody knows that I've got the idol.
It's like, well, you hid it, right? No, it's in my bag.
Just in my bag, yeah. Well, and I kind of, the scene where they were actually looking through her bag just felt so, like, middle school. I think at some point Crystal even says, "No, keep looking. We're going to get in trouble."
Yeah. She did.
Because Kelly was supposed to be the lookout, and she kept looking back into the tent to see what was going on.
Yeah.
It's like, you're supposed to be the lookout. This is an important function, and you can't just... But, yeah, we're going to get in trouble. That was such a funny... You know, they're the majority, and they're trying to find out... They're doing something that's not against the rules in order to find out if she has the idol or not. But she's worried that they're going to get in trouble. From who? What? This is something that I'm glad they finally said it clearly in Tribal Council. They are allowed to go through the people's backs. I mean, we knew that had to be true, but they've now said it explicitly now.
Yeah, that it's always been understood that you can do that.
Yeah. Or at the very least, yeah, there's no rule against it. And so right. If someone is, you know, leaves their bag where someone else can find it and it's unattended, then... Yeah, but so I couldn't help... I was just laughing when Crystal said that, because I'm thinking, who are you going to get in trouble from?
Yeah.
Maybe
Ace really does have that much... I mean, maybe his charisma really does come out like that in real life, where he's almost taking over the role of the de facto leader.
Yeah.
And they're afraid if he catches them looking through her bag. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm just speculating here. I mean, what possible reason could they think that anybody would care? I mean, was Sugar going to come back and catch him and get him in trouble? Like, hey,
well, I think
you
they,
found
they,
my
they,
idol.
They wanted to avoid confrontation, I guess.
Yeah, that must be what they meant.
I'm sure that's it, but it was just kind of, it was funny.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah, and so it was just hilarious that, like we said it early on, I like Sugar, but Sugar, honey, you're not good at this. So leading into Tribal Council, we've got the two choices. Are they going to cut out the cancer or blindside the idol? And
I think it was fairly clear even before Tribal. I think, I don't remember if it was Crystal or somebody even said, like, man, we really need to blindside Sugar, but GC just cannot be here another day.
Yeah.
And that was sort of where they cut to Tribal, and it was like, well, that takes the ambiguity out of it.
Right. You know, I wasn't 100% certain, but I was definitely thinking to myself, I'm pretty sure I know what's happening, and frankly, if they don't get rid of GC, that's a huge mistake. Because I think that he was so negative that it was just making life miserable for everybody else at camp. And so they're early enough in this that they don't... It's not that big a deal to get the idol out in the open yet.
Especially not if everybody knows where it is, because that...
Yeah. It just means they don't target her. Or it means they just need to be aware of that. That's part of the landscape, you know? They need to... You know, whoever they decide to vote out, they need to make sure that it's not, you know, clear. You know, so she doesn't just, you know, give it to Ace when they try to vote out Ace or whatever. But, so, yeah, that's a problem. But GC was clearly a bigger problem. It was, they weren't going to get anywhere with him there.
No, and he goes back to what we've discussed so many times before, is that he's a wild card. Because he's so messed up mentally, you can't count on him in an alliance. You can't count on him after the merge. You can't count on him to behave like a rational person.
You can't count on him to show up for the challenges on time.
Right. So, you know, even if you're thinking endgame, you don't want to be in an alliance with that guy because he's volatile.
Yeah.
You just need to get rid of him, and so you don't even have to deal with him.
Yeah. So at Tribal Council, GC doesn't want to suffer anymore, and he makes Sugar cry.
Because he's had a hard life, so.
Yeah. But, you know, at the same time, given how negative he was and that he's sort of de facto quitting, if not, you know, if not officially quitting, you know, he's making them vote him out instead of actually just leaving.
Which, but I'm actually surprised that Probst didn't press on that more, because he's done that in the past.
Yeah.
Where he's basically made people say, I want you to vote me out because I'm a quitter, at Tribal Council. I mean, he's done that. And he didn't really, at least what we saw in the edit, he didn't really latch into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It was just kind of hard to say why he didn't push on that, because it seemed pretty clear that that's what was happening. You know, and I have to say, given all of that, though, with GC, it seemed like if anyone is going to leave the game the way he did, he at least seemed to do it kind of for the right reasons, which was to just sort of, you know, I'm miserable out here, and it's really given me a new appreciation for the things that I do actually have in my life.
Yes.
And just sort of, I've gotten out here away from those things and realized that I was taking some of them for granted, and now I just want to go home. And, you know, I have to kind of respect that, even though I can't help but think that it would have been nice if he had figured that out before coming on the show, so that he didn't take someone else's spot. But
I agree. I agree. I thought...
Yeah,
the, you know, the appreciation for things, that's a strong argument. You know, like, hey, I didn't even realize how much I actually really liked what I had going on. Mm-hmm. The only thing that kind of bugged me is, you know, here he's talking about, oh, you know, I suffered my whole life and I'm tired of suffering. It's like, dude, it's 24 more days. I mean, mm-hmm. if you suffered your whole life, you could make it 24 more days, can't you?
Well, yeah. You know, I have to say, too, that even though these are clearly extraordinary circumstances for everybody who's on the show, you know, they do these studies where they show that people have kind of this default level of happiness and satisfaction almost completely independent of what's going on around them, you know, with some exceptions, of course. But, you know, if you get someone who is profoundly unhappy with their lives, and they just keep thinking that they, if only X happens, then they'll be happy. And then only if they get X, then all of a sudden they say, oh, well, I'm still not happy. Now clearly I need Y. And if I get Y, then I'll be happy. And then they get that, and then they're still not happy. And so now S must be Z. And but then you get other people who may be sure they want various things, but they're doing okay with what they've got. And they just people tend to have this default level of happiness, and it seemed kind of like GC maybe has a low default level of happiness.
I never thought about it that way.
I have no idea if that really plays into this. I mean, but at the same time, I mean, he said in his bio that he had, like, camping experience, and he used to, you know, do stuff in the outdoors and everything, and so I can't help but think that this is not like he's some, you know, city kid who's, you know, never slept outside before, and all of a sudden just this sort of experience is completely foreign or something.
Right, what's her name from...
Sari,
from the last two episodes, yeah.
And so it just seemed like... I'm not sure what was going on with him. Why was he so miserable? Now, he kind of tried to make it all about, like, the politics of the game, the scheming and the backstabbing and everything, but that's kind of an easy scapegoat, because, frankly, they didn't do very much of that.
He said he didn't like who he was becoming, and I could kind of see that. I mean, because he, you know, maybe he doesn't, you know, in his normal life, doesn't get that grumpy about things, and I don't know.
You know, I could see that too, actually, now that you point that out, because I know that even though most of the time I think that I'm, you know, inside I'm deeply neurotic, but I think I get along with people fairly easily and am pretty easygoing most of the time in my, you know, sort of personal demeanor and all of that. But I do know that, for example, when I get a headache or I'm not feeling well or something, I am profoundly more antisocial than times when I'm feeling okay. And so maybe that's kind of what it was for him, is that he sort of feels like he's got this friendly, outgoing personality most of the time, but then he's out there with, you know, lack of sleep and not enough food, and he's just feeling grumpy and irritable all the time.
And he wasn't liking that.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are cognitive enough to say, this is just, you know, the game, and it's only 24 more days, like I kind of pointed out. And mm-hmm. But, you know, we've all been in that moment where, even though you know where the end time is, if you're in something where, well, like having a huge headache, you know you're going to wake up the next morning and you're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But that evening or whatever, even if it's only a couple of hours, seems like days.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what he was getting into, is that even though it was only 15 days, and he could tell himself it's only 24 more days, it had felt like he'd been doing it for 6 months already, and he had another 9 months to go, you know, because he was so unhappy with what he was running into. So, I could see that.
So, ultimately, I'm glad GC is gone. I think it was the right move for the tribe. But I can't dislike GC the same way that, for example, we gave Chet a hard time.
Right.
I feel like that GC, despite being so negative and everything, he has some character underneath all of that. And it was really just kind of recognizing that it was probably a mistake for him to come on the show in the first place.
And did he leave early enough where he's allowed to go home right away, or does he have to go to that, like, camp?
I'm pretty sure they all go to the camp. I mean, I don't think any of them get to go home right away.
See that? I mean, I know we just kind of went through all the reasons why through his mind it made sense, but that's the part that really bugs me about this kind of quitting thing, is that you don't really go home anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you get more comfort, but you got to go hang out with the other people who didn't make it. Like, and you just, as opposed to actually continuing to play the game, but you have to be there the same amount of time. So,
yeah.
But again, maybe that goes back to my same argument, that maybe you can tell yourself that, but when you're actually in the moment, it's too hard to convince yourself, you know.
Well, and it just becomes a matter of even just that additional level of comfort seems like it would be worth it.
Right.
Well, and think about this, too. The pressure is off. Because when they're still in the game, there's this pressure that they have to win, they have to do things right, they have to be thinking strategy all the time. Whereas, you know, once you're gone, even if you don't get to go home right away, at least it's just like, whew, that's over. I got to think that that's a big part of it, too. You know, just kind of the sensation of, I just want to be done with this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and that's a true psychological thing. I mean, it's, you know, like the Navy SEAL training. Anyone's allowed to quit at any time. You just have to go ring a bell, and you're allowed to go leave. And, you know, 60% of every Navy SEAL class leaves because they get burned out and they just want to go home. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's not like it's unique to this game. It's yeah. So you're right. Anyway.
Yeah. So, and the truth is, it was the right play for the rest of the tribe, not just because he was such a negative presence, but because, frankly, even if they had gotten Sugar out, he might have quit anyway, and then they would have been two people down.
Right.
And so he might...
And going into a merge, he would have been volatile, and you never know what... He would have made decisions that could not have been accounted for.
Yeah.
You know, so right play to get rid of him.
Yeah. And it's clearly what he wanted anyway, too, so...
Yeah. All right.
All right, so next time, Ace has complete supremacy.
Yes. And he says it like he really believes it. So,
I think he does. He does believe
it. I really
it.
Do. I really do, which is what makes him...
That's hilarious. Cool. Yes. You know, it's because... Well, but... You know? If he can pull it off, then who are we to say that he was ever wrong?
Yeah.
You know, we'll have to see. Because, you know, he certainly... I think he and Maddie are the strongest players on the rest of the tribe. And so, I don't know, I mean, strongest player sometimes gets voted out because, you know, I mean, being in the minority and being a strong player obviously makes you a threat for the rest. But it also gives you a little bit of power just in the sense that you can kind of, you can, you know, leverage that power, that strength. You know? So, we'll have to see. Plus, he's got Sugar, who's clearly just going to do whatever he tells her to do. And...
Well, she was like, I mean, what are... I mean, how obsequious was that? Oh, do you want me to give you the idol?
Let me think about that.
It's like... I mean, really? And then he's got Maddie doing something for him. I mean, I couldn't even really... I mean, obviously, it was sort of a preview, but it seemed that he's got Maddie in his pocket, too.
Well, I think Maddie doesn't want to be allied with Crystal and Ken.
No, and would you?
No. So, who can blame him? I mean, I'm just saying that it wouldn't surprise me a bit if Maddie decides to ally with Ace. And because, frankly, I think that that would almost be the right move for him.
No, I mean, Crystal's a mess, and mm-hmm. Kenny. I mean, Kenny, who hasn't, you know, who seems to treat Survivor like it's going to somehow, like, be his dating pool.
Yeah.
I mean... And you just see it every time. I mean, this is the guy who hasn't kissed a girl in 5 years, but every time that he's sitting with, I don't even remember the other girl's name, and then Kelly now, he's in heaven.
Yeah. So, we'll have to see. But I definitely, you know, despite getting rid of GC, I don't think that's sufficient to make Fong a real threat to Coda at this point. I mean, it's possible that they could pull out a win, but it would be more a fluke than you know, real prediction. You know, they're definitely the underdog.
Yeah, I mean, you just never know what the challenge is going to be, so it's hard to...
Mm-hmm. But, and, you know, the truth is that I almost kind of want them to continue to lose just because... what I'm hoping is that the people that I don't like as much will just go ahead and get voted off.
Like
and
who?
So we can. Well, I didn't. I mean, Crystal, I like her sometimes, but. And she. I guess she keeps things dramatic, but. I don't know. I feel like. I don't know. Well.
Sorry. I was going to say, I want Coda to lose once and just get rid of Susie, because she is obviously so uninteresting. That they never, ever show... Like, she has never been in a confessional interview, like, televised, because she has nothing to say, clearly. And there's just no interesting things about her.
Yeah.
I mean, Crystal at least is interesting, whether you like her or dislike her. Kelly is interesting. Mm-hmm. And I actually started to like her a little bit more after this.
Yeah, you know, I guess, you know, when I said that about getting rid of the people I don't like... It occurred to me after saying it that I wasn't even really sure who I meant. So, I don't know. I guess I feel like I like the people on Coda better. Just generally, I think. That's maybe all I was really thinking. But, anyway, you know, kind of, you know, I think... You know, I'm enjoying this season, but last season's pretty tough to top.
Yeah.
But we'll see, because there's still a lot of really interesting people, for example, that we haven't had to see do very much yet in terms of the hardcore strategizing. So.
True.
So we'll see how things continue to shape out. Shape out. I don't think that's an actual phrase.
Uh-uh.
Well, I'm coining it right now.
Sounds good to me.
All right, then. I think that's enough for this episode, then, and
mm-hmm.
we can say goodnight.
Good night.
We could do, like, say goodnight, Mikey!
No.
That's it for this installment. Remember that you can find the podcast notes at christianaellis.com. Music for Talking About Survivor is Freedom by Citrus on the Fresh Music label at PodSafe Music Network. Thanks for listening.